Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Welcome back, guys. We're joined by a very special guest. I'm going to give Mason the honors of introducing.
Yeah, well, very excited to have our first guest of the Shibbitt and Mason in the Know era for our podcast, Chase McVay. And how Chase and I know each other is through my brother. He was a groomsman at my brother's wedding last year, and got to know him through my brother. And seems like a pretty good dude from what I can tell. And so Chase, the reason we're bringing him on is he until recently was an employee for the Pelicans in their ticket sales department. And I'll let him explain exactly what his role was and what he was doing for them. But Chase, first of all, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate it. It's really cool to be on.
Yeah, so just real quick, let's start off by telling the good people listening what was your job? What were you doing with the Pelicans?
Yeah, so I was with the Pels for a little over 4 years. I was working in their ticket sales department, as Mason said. Started off just in the general, selling season tickets, sell whatever you can type of thing, and then after about a year and a half or so, bumped up to group sales. So I was in, running a lot of group accounts and bringing big parties out to individual games. That was kind of my focus. But, we sold a lot of stuff for the Pels. You kind of sell across the board there. It's just get as many people into the building as you can. And also worked a little bit on the Saints side. So it was a really cool job. Really fortunate to have the opportunity to work there. And had a baby about a year ago, so had to take a step back and get rid of the 60-hour work week so I could spend a little more time at home. But it was a great time while I was there.
That's awesome. Appreciate the info. Congratulations on the little one. I've had the privilege of meeting the little rascal, and
he's a rascal for sure.
We had a list of questions that you and I have talked about, but you instantly have already brought up something else that I wanted to pick your brain on. We hear a lot, or a lot is speculated about kind of the synergies and like what the relationship between the Pelicans and the Saints, and how that works from a business perspective and from a operations perspective from the sports side of things. What do you have any thoughts? And if this is too on the spot, feel free to just pass. But do you have any thoughts on how that relationship works and what kind of through your eyes, what you've seen?
Yeah, it's actually it's really interesting. When I first got there, it was about maybe 7 or 8 months after the purchase of the Pels had been official. So it was really early on in the Benson era, I guess. And I actually grew up a Saints fan. I grew up in Northwest Florida. Was kind of stuck in the middle of Atlanta, Jacksonville, Tampa, New Orleans, and picked New Orleans for some reason, and just grew up a huge Saints fan. So I followed them a lot, knew a lot about Mr. Benson. And when I got here, it was right after they had taken over the basketball team. And to be honest, when I first came, it was pretty fragmented. You know, it was kind of, you know, everybody was in the same building, but, you know, you had a person doing the same job for each team. You know, you had one person that did the job for the Saints and one person that did the job for the Pels, and there really wasn't a good mesh yet. And I think a lot of that was just because, you know, they're billion-dollar companies, essentially, and merging them and making them fit well together is a process. It's not something that happens overnight. But as I, you know, spent my time there, you know, over a little over 4 years, right when I left, it had meshed so much better. The sales staff now sells both sides. The sponsorship staff sells both sides. The accounting is handled for both teams by the same people. So they really did a good job of consolidating and making sure that both teams were on the same page, and it really felt like it was a partnership more so than just like a coexistence. Because for a long time, they were competitors, you know. Obviously, they have different seasons, and the games aren't – they don't really overlap too much. But they were entertainment options in the same city that have to compete for fans' attention. And all of a sudden, they had to be on the same page and really help each other out. So it took some time, but, you know, over the course of my time there, I really saw it mesh together really well. And by the time I left, it was a really, really cohesive unit. The executives there have done a really nice job of making sure they consolidated power. There were some hiccups along the way just in terms of, you know, the NBA has got different rules from the NFL. And there's some stuff that, you know, there's a learning curve there, but it was a really, really cool process to watch happen for sure.
Dude, that's nice. Some really cool info. I think you touched upon a couple things that I want to comment on. First, the idea that the Saints and Pelicans were viewed as competitors at one point. That's a thought that never really crossed my mind, but now that you mention it, it makes total sense because your business is to put butts in seats, right?
Exactly.
And you know, if you have an overlapping of events and knowing that the people of New Orleans may have a fixed budget, a lot of people might have a fixed budget, and they have to choose between the two, then you don't want to cannibalize one or the other. So that's a balance I never even thought about. But another cool thing that you mentioned is the idea of this harmony, them working together. Because a lot of times when you read about the Saints and Pelicans in the media, the assumption that people sort of go towards is them sharing responsibilities, them working cohesively is a bad thing, and it looks bad on the ownership, which is a narrative that I never really got behind. So, you know, you guys working together to accomplish a lot of the same tasks, did you see that as a benefit from what it was before? Or did you see it helping out?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that, you know, the really unforeseen benefit, and I'm sure Mr. Benson saw it, you know, just because he made the purchase and he's a lot smarter guy than I am. That's why he was a billionaire, you know, but the thing that I didn't really expect to happen was doors opening sort of in between the two. So you had fans that have been diehard Saints fans. You know, you think about the guys that have been tailgating in there since the 60s and 70s. Like, you know, they're just diehard, and they were hardcore. I hate basketball. Don't like it. And same on the basketball side. Obviously not as many. You know, ultimately this is a football town, as a lot of people will tell you. But there is a really passionate basketball fan base, and a lot of them only liked basketball. And, you know, there was sort of a rivalry there. I mean, I don't know how deep it ran. I don't know if it was ever, you know, if there's ever any animosity or anything. But when they came together and you really started to see, especially the players, sort of take ownership of it and really start to get behind it, like when Mark Ingram and Cam Jordan and Drew was bringing his sons courtside for the Pels games early on, you really saw there was each team was sort of backing each other. And that let basketball fans really open up and start to consider football and give it a shot and become real true fans of football. And the same opposite, which was really helpful for the Pelicans, because you got to take those Saints fans that are obviously very passionate about sports, just never really gave basketball a shot. But now that they were under the same roof as the Saints, you know, they were willing to do it because it was Mr. B. you know, and it was New Orleans, and it was, you know, a sense of pride about your city to take part in not just the football, because, you know, now they're under the same roof. You support one, you got to support both, you know, and it was really cool to sort of see the fans start to mesh and start to intermingle and even cross over the lines a little bit. And from a sales standpoint, it was really cool to see, you know, Saints fans that you kind of took on as account, you know, you take on accounts to sort of make sure they're happy, you service them and stuff like that. You really started to see an interest grow in basketball as the years went on. One, because the team was getting better, obviously, but two, because the public effort to make sure that they were on the same page and really forward facing as a unit and not two opposing teams was starting to really take hold in the community. And, you know, that stuff was really cool to see. It started to overlap. It was really awesome.
That's awesome. And I think it actually, that meshed really well with what we were, what we had next. And we talked about how this discussion would go when we think about the growth of the fan base over the years, and you having, you know, I think the fact you had 4 years of experience with the team is it gives you a unique perspective to comment on, you know, what the Pelicans themselves have done to really, you know, we a lot of us who are not just Schmidt and I, but people who are listening, were part of the fan base when the I'm In campaign rolled about a decade ago, and so we remember that. But as far as kind of in more recent years, what are some of the unique things the team has done that maybe we hasn't been as visible to the fan base to see, you know, how they've encouraged and kind of captured a larger audience in New Orleans and even beyond the city of New Orleans to the broader southeastern market?
Well, yeah. Well, the first thing I'll say is that the number one driver of ticket sales is winning, and that's in any sport, any level of sport. I mean, from, you know, you're not going to see any 0-12 tiny mite teams have anybody else other than their moms there if they're not really good, you know. So it doesn't matter where you are, as long as you're winning, you're going to put butts in seats. But especially what the Pelicans have done, the Saints don't really have this problem. You know, there's a huge waiting list for tickets and there's a huge demand for that product. And what the Pelicans have done is really leverage that, the excitement for basketball here, because the team is getting better. You've seen strides. There was a couple dips there, obviously, and there's been some up and downs, but overall the trajectory of the team has gone up ever since I moved here about 4.5 years ago, 5 years ago now. So you've seen a huge just rise in interest based on winning. That's number one. Number two is the sales staff at the Pelicans, and I'm still in sales, not in the sports industry anymore, but I'm on a sales team. The sales staff at the Pelicans is unreal. The kind of talent they brought in, and the consultants is what I like to call them, because, you know, you think of salesmen, you think of like Wolf of Wall Street, just, you know, guys on the phone crushing it, hard selling, being kind of jerks on the phone to get people to spend money. What I've seen at the Pelicans and on the Saints side, because they handle both, is they're really consultants. They're trying to say, hey, you know, I know you like sports. You know, it's an entertainment. It's one of the best entertainment options in the city. And I know you don't want to spend a ton of money on it. Let me help you find something that'll at least get you in the building and see a couple games. And it's been a really good, there's been a really good influx of talent of salespeople over the last couple years and a growth of the staff that's had a really positive outreach as far as getting people in the building. There's really good leadership over there. Brian Ross is the senior director of ticket sales over there, senior director of ticket sales and service. And he's a very numbers driven guy. So he knows exactly, you know, what sort of efforts can bump up sales and what sort of efforts can down them. So, you know, there's really good leadership. But the talent number two, I guess, behind winning, the talent of the sales staff is a really, really huge, factor in that. I wasn't really part of that talent. I wasn't the greatest sales rep. I did all right, but the guys they have over there are just really, really good at finding solutions and finding ways to get fans in the seats, because, you know, it's not about taking every dime out of the pocket of a fan, as I'm sure Dr. Ginsburg knows, you know, he's had his tickets forever. It's about finding something that fits each customer and gives them an opportunity to get in the building at the right cost so it doesn't hurt their budget and to fit their schedule. And there's a lot of really flexible ways to do that. So not to sound like a salesman, I feel like I'm going back into my role here, but there is a really good variety of options for people. And I don't think that was there back before Mr. Benson took over. There wasn't a ton of variety in how you could get in the building. It was kind of either season tickets or bust. Might have been a few intermittent plans here and there, but they really found a solution to find something to get every single type of fan in the building, whether it's a diehard or the dude that just wants to pop in on the weekends every now and then.
So you brought up a couple of things that I want to comment on. First, you mentioned that, you know, you worked a lot in the group sales and how the staff has done a really good job of making moves to attract a lot of different people. I can personally vouch for that. Over the years, the past couple of years, there's been some really cool opportunities where if you buy a ticket, it comes with a jersey or a hoodie or something along with that. And it's usually about like $30 for a ticket. It's a lower bowl ticket. And, you know, you walk away with a possession. Like, I mean, I think I got an Anthony Davis jersey out of it. I got a Mardi Gras jersey out of it. I've gotten like a hoodie out of it before. And every time that sort of happened, I've hit up my ticket rep and be like, hey, I have like a group of people. It's usually like my ultimate frisbee team, because we'll send it in our group chat. Be like, I have a group of people that want in. You know, like, what can you do to hook us up with like seats together? And they've done.
Yeah.
They've always come through and provided us with some great seats. And obviously, like, when you're walking out with a jersey and a lower bowl seat with $30, like that's a steal of a deal. So I mean, that's been incredible. Now, you mentioned that they're very numbers driven, and you know, if people don't know me, for those who don't know me, I love numbers. I obsess over numbers. So when you mentioned that got me going for a bit. But I wanted to ask you more about that. What, you know, are sort of your measures for internal success? Did you guys have like benchmarks that you were trying to meet? Now, historically, when you think of sports, you think of ticket sales, and you even think of, you know, what this team was trying to accomplish before the sale, which was, I think it was like 10,000 season tickets sales before, you know, mm-hmm. it was decided, like, you know, if they can sell the team or not. I don't know if that number is accurate, but there was a lot of buzz on the amount of season ticket sales. And that's typically the first thing the average fan thinks of when it comes to like measurements and metrics. But obviously not every customer is the same. Like, you know, you'll have a lot of one-off sales, you'll have season ticket sales, you have a litany of ad hoc sales, and you know, you obviously have your mm-hmm. your group sales, and then the packages that you sell to like companies and corporations. So, you know, how do you sort of, and this may be a lot to try to answer at once, but how do you sort of separate the groups, and also like what do you do as internal benchmarks of success? Like, what are you not competing towards, but what are you measuring yourself against, and what, like, at the end of the day, what does the team feel like is a successful season in terms of sales?
Yeah, it's a good question. So the first thing is there are a lot of different products to sell. There's groups, there's suites, there's floor seats, there's lower bowl seats, there's upper bowl seats, there's hospitality areas, there's pregame events that you can sell. So there's a lot of different products out there. And obviously it's a lot for one sales rep to sort of focus on. So they have different teams. You know, there's a premium team that sells the high dollar stuff, floor seats, suites, that kind of stuff. There's the group sales reps, which I was, focuses on bringing out large groups of people to one individual game. You got your just general season ticket account executives who are just trying to sell as many plans as possible. So that's how you focus on it. That's how you fill it out. As far as like the specific numbers, you know, I left right before they sort of launched this new campaign for this year. And, you know, you have a big meeting every year that says, hey guys, this is our goal. I left right before they did that, so I don't know the exact numbers. I know for sure, though, the focus, especially last year, was to sell out the lower bowl for every single game. And we got very, very, very close. There was only a few games where there was a few games where we didn't sell every single lower bowl ticket. And I know what people are thinking. You know, I've been to those games. Lower bowl's not filled. Well, what I like to tell people is just because there's not a butt in a seat doesn't mean that ticket's not sold. People don't show up to games, so don't come at me on Twitter about the lower bowl being empty. I get it.
That's a really good point, because I think people don't recognize that. And I'm not. We're going to get more into it in that next point a little bit, so I don't want to stop you from explaining. But I think that's an important realization, is that because no one's there, that doesn't mean the ticket wasn't sold. It's up to the business is selling the ticket, not people physically being there necessarily.
Exactly. So the, like I said, the goal was to sell out that lower bowl for every single game. We got very, very close, and it's a group effort. You know, you have to sell every single floor seat for that to be a sellout. You have to sell as many plans as possible to fill out those tickets. Whatever tickets are left over from plans not being sold, groups has to step up and fill those. So, you know, it's a really big effort on the whole team as a unit to really focus on each game and make sure you're pushing it. And I love that you brought up the giveaways. Those group giveaways were a huge success. It's a main reason why that lower bowl looks so good all throughout last year, is because it's a value add. You know, yeah, you're going to come out on a Tuesday night to watch the Jazz. You know, that's not every single basketball fan in the city is going to get up out of their chair and, you know, drive downtown to go see the Jazz play on a Tuesday. But if you can say, hey, you'll leave with a hoodie, or hey, you'll leave with a lunchbox for your kid, or hey, you'll leave with a jersey. It gets people motivated to go to the games. And aside from that, they walk out with something they can wear around town. It's free marketing, you know, and it doesn't cost the team that much to do it. So it's a really, really good way to motivate some spirit about the team, and to also get people in the stands too, because you have to show up at the game to get your item. It's a really, really smart way. I mean, teams have been using giveaways for a long, long time. But I think the smart thing that I've never seen before is they made it a group-only giveaway. So you have to bring at least 10 people. You have to bring out a big group. You can't just come with like you and your girlfriend, unless you like get a bunch of other people and their girlfriends together. So it's a really smart way of knocking out a big chunk of tickets at once, and that's the reason why the lower bowl looked so good last year throughout most of the games.
Can I just say I'm really glad you brought up the Jazz as a team that people don't really want to see, because screw the Jazz.
I love to see them. But I love to watch them. They're fun, dude. Donovan Mitchell's he's a lot of fun to watch.
Take him off that team. Yeah. I don't know. But, you know, I'm just playing.
So I guess kind of playing into that that topic regarding those lower bowl seats and you know, what gets sold, what doesn't get sold. Can you kind of shed a little more light on how that secondary market works, whether that secondary market is A, StubHub, or B, it could be something as simple as saying, okay, we sold these tickets to a corporation. How do we, can we motivate those corporations to make sure they're giving those tickets to the people, to get people in seats? Because I know I've heard from some of my friends who have worked for different companies around the city, their companies have tickets, and sometimes those tickets just go unused, and there's no good reason for it. I mean, there could be a situation where they just didn't think to give the tickets to anybody during that given game. And that fuels these false perceptions about the market in New Orleans and being able to sell out or fill the arena for games. And so I don't know, where you want to start, whether it's whether it's that or whether it's actually StubHub or any other the secondary market, the avenues to purchase the tickets. But would love to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, well, I'll start with the second thing you said. So, when you sell to companies and you sell a suite that's like 16 tickets, 24 if you fill it up, and it's 42 games, you know, and a lot of those games fall on during the week. And to be honest with you, a lot of these companies are buying these tickets for the major marquee events. And to be honest, a lot of them are buying them for concerts too. There's a lot of extra benefits that come with being that premium type of customer. You get pre-sales to the big concerts. And we know the Smoothie King Center gets a ton of huge, like, top level shows. Like, New Orleans is not the kind of city that size-wise that should get these massive, massive shows, but they do just because of the type of market it is and the fact that it's an entertainment city. So a lot of huge shows come through here, and a lot of companies just want to buy the suite, not for Pelicans first, to be honest. Sometimes some of them just want the concerts first, and the Pelicans is kind of an add-in. So But aside from that, it is a lot of tickets to handle too. 42 times 16. I'm not good at math. Shamit, you might be better at doing that math off the top of your head. That's a ton of tickets to give away over the course of, you know, 7 months or so. It's not the same for every single one, but rest assured that the tickets are being sold. You know, these suites are in high demand and they're moving. That's never something that's been a factor of, you know, it's never been something that's been at risk. It's not a major focus. I mean, they always want to sell them out, obviously, but it's not a high priority item. The biggest thing is the lower level push, which is just getting real fans in the seats, and the secondary market that kind of leads into that. You know, obviously there's been sort of a switch over as far as the vendor goes. The fans of this the listeners to this podcast know they're kind of plugged in, but SeatGeek is kind of taking over the primary role as vendor, and StubHub's just sort of jumped in. I think the StubHub edition is just for stability. There's a lot of stuff with SeatGeek as a newer platform that, you know, maybe they need to iron out. And with the Saints season coming up, I mean, first preseason game was last week. They really have to make sure that they're rock solid as far as tickets go. So they probably just brought them in to be sort of a stabilizer. I'm not 100% sure on that. That's just kind of speculation. But yeah, I mean, the secondary market is a sort of a pro and a con. The pro is it gives consumers another option. You know, options are always good in a marketplace. Make sure that, you know, the prices can't be driven up too high. The con is that the source for the tickets on all these secondary markets come from the primary source. So, you know, people are purchasing tickets from the Pelicans directly and reselling them and trying to mark them up to make profits, which, good business model, I guess. It's great. But that can drive some people out of the ticket purchasing marketplace. And it also floods the market because a lot of these people buy season tickets to sell the Warriors game and the Celtics game and now the Lakers game, and they sell those for huge markups, and then the other ones are just kind of there and they just want to get rid of them. So they might put them out there for $3 and $4. So it kind of waters down the market a little bit, takes a little bit of credibility away from the club directly. So it's good that it's another option, but it sort of throws in a huge variable that can sort of really swing one game one way or the other. Because you know, if you're a consumer and you're looking to go to a game and you see tickets are $2 in the upper level, in your head you're probably like, man, this probably is a crappy game. I don't even know if I want to go now, you know. And that sort of drives perception of how the game is supposed to look, and it can really influence the type of crowd that's in the building, you know. So it's a pro and a con. I would just tell people to sort of, you know, be wary of it. It's not always the most reputable source of tickets, but it is an option, and it's a good way for somebody to find a budget way into a building.
Yeah, and part of that, it's not on the, you know, it shouldn't be on you guys. That's part about how your business and how you're pricing tickets. I mean, more and more teams are going to this dynamic pricing model. The days of every game is worth every ticket for every game is cost the same as a thing of the past. I mean, it's probably been at least a decade since teams started doing that, and pretty much every team in all the major sports do it now. You're going to have to pay, even from the primary source, you're going to pay more for the Lakers or for the Golden State Warriors than you're going to pay for the Pistons on a Monday night. And so hopefully, I mean, dynamic pricing gets you part of the way there, but obviously it doesn't get you all the way there. And so that all good, really good insight, and it's important for people to know. As far as the relationship between the Pelicans and the secondary markets, do you have any insight? I know the new partnership, you probably can't speak to that, but just historically, do you have any insight into how that relationship typically works? Is it positive? Is there any kind of is it tumultuous in any way? What's going on?
And then as a follow-up to that, what's the sort of added benefit to buying directly through the team other than you're supporting the team, whereas buying through a secondary market?
Yeah, so I'll tackle the first one first, the Mason's question first. So as far as the relationship, you know, when you become the official vendor, ticket platform of a team, you're no longer the secondary market. You're the primary. So it's usually a pretty rock solid relationship. You know, there's not a ton of, you know, disputes or anything. Ticketmaster was sitting pretty for a while because they had both the Saints and the Pels, you know, be selling tickets through their platform, and they were making money off every transaction. And especially with the Saints, they were just raking in the money. At a certain point, though, you need to be, especially in this age where, you know, e-tickets are becoming much more prevalent. They've even gotten rid of paper programs at the games because everything's going digital. Ticketmaster just kind of fell behind on the innovation side of it. And to make sure that they're providing as much service and as much functionality and convenience to the customer as possible, they had to sort of go a different way. And SeatGeek has been really good on making sure they're really user-friendly. You know, I listen to the Bill Simmons podcast. He has a SeatGeek app, ad on there every single show. He's like, it's three clicks and a swipe, and you buy your ticket or whatever it is. It is that easy. I just bought Kevin Hart tickets on SeatGeek like 2 weeks ago, and it was super, super convenient. And that's the kind of stuff
this would that be makes a
knowing, knowing you're a Kevin Hart fan, I think we got to cut this off right now, man.
Hey, man, he was really, really funny. They kicked out about 300 people because they were trying to film him. So it seems like he's got sort of like a short guy mafia that's like protecting him from cameras. But it was really funny, man. He was hilarious. I love the show.
All I'm saying is this would be a great pod if we were actually sponsored by SeatGeek like all the other pods, because we're doing a hell of a sell job for them.
Yeah, well, it's like Stamps.com and SeatGeek and like HelloFresh or Blue Apron. Like those are like the three main ones that you get. You need to shoot some emails out, guys.
Yeah. Get you.
But yeah, but to be honest with you, the reason why I think they're sort of shifting and made that partnership is because the easier it is for somebody to buy tickets who's never bought tickets before, the more people you're going to get in the building. Because I can't tell you how many times I've logged on to Ticketmaster and just gotten frustrated because it doesn't make sense. The seats that you want are gone by the time you put them in your cart, and you can't get in touch with customer service. It's a pain. It's always been a pain. And the fact that, again, like we talked about, there are options now, makes it so that the obsolete sort of fall behind. Not saying that they're in trouble, because they're obviously a huge company still, but for the market that the Pelicans are trying to reach, those everyday fans that they want to come back time and time and time again, convenience is key. And that's, I think that's the main reason behind the switch. Shamit, to your point, to your question, what's the benefit of buying, directly from the team outside of just feeling like you're a part of it? That's the main benefit, in my opinion. Just feeling like you're plugged in directly to the team is great. There's no taxes or fees if you buy directly through. Like, I can't tell you how many, like those, back to Kevin Hart, like those tickets that I bought last week, I paid almost double the price that was listed because of fees. And that's just because these ticket platforms have to make money on secondary sales and even on primary sales. But if you buy directly through the Pels, you're not paying any of that. You know, it's just a straight ticket cost and that's it. And you don't have to worry about getting jerked around or them quoting you one price and the charge on your credit card is a second price. There's none of that. But the benefit, another huge benefit of buying directly is that relationship with your ticket rep. They will take care of you. They want your business. They want to make sure that you're coming back to them. You know, sales is a high paying job if you do it right. So the good ones make sure they take care of their customers so that they come back. And they will make you feel like you're appreciated, and they're not just going to call you to get your credit card number, like a Ticketmaster person would, or like someone at the box office would. You know, they're really going to take the time to get to know you, learn your kid, you know, learn their birthday, know who their favorite player is, maybe bring them a goodie bag one time, maybe bring them down to court for warm-ups before one of the games. They're going to take the time to do those special things for you that make you feel more appreciated than just a seat number. You know, you're not a seat number, you're Greg, and it's your son Blake. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So there's some really, really cool benefits for fans, like true sports fans and Pelicans fans, that you get through buying directly from the team than you do on a secondary market.
I can speak to that directly. I have a great ticket rep. Shout out Denton Hunter. She very recently, I was at one of those group events where you get a hoodie, and I had gone to pick up my hoodie, and by the time I had gotten to my spot, the sizes that I wanted, or the size that I wanted, was all gone. They were left with a bunch of double XLs or triple XLs. I'm not the largest person, so I was looking more in the medium range, and I was like, you know, no worries. I picked up the double XL, didn't take it out of its packaging or anything, and I got to my seat and I emailed Denton and I was like, hey, like, is there any chance you have any mediums lying around? It'd be awesome if I could get one my size. If not, you know, it's cool. And I'd hit send, and it'd been maybe 30 seconds, and she was like already walking down the aisle down to my row, and she had a medium in her hand. She's like, hey, you're looking for this? And I'm like, what? Hello. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that's probably minor compared to, you know, a lot of the more tenured people who are attending games, you know, like your high dollar season ticket holders and all of that. But even that experience for me was really rewarding, and was pretty cool that, you know, they're willing to take care of you like that.
Yeah, well, the biggest thing is, like, if people fail to understand this, is going to Pelicans games is not a necessity. It's not something you have to do. It's something that people choose to go to with their discretionary income. And for them to choose to go to the games, there needs to be something a little bit more and something a little bit extra to keep coming back. And I spoke to the staff earlier and how great they are. And every single person on the staff, almost to a person, is great at being a good rep. Not just a guy you can call when you need tickets. It's somebody who is going to get to know you and be your friend on top of being your rep. So, you know, when it comes to spending your extra money, stuff that you could be spending on anything else in the world, you know, it really takes a good rep to keep you coming back. Because I don't know about you guys, like, I hate going to the movies now because every time I go, somebody's talking or on their cell phone or whatever. And when I go talk to the manager, he is like a 22-year-old dweeb who doesn't really care that I'm there and just wants me to get out of his face. So I stopped going. And that's money that could be going back to them if he had just been a little bit nicer or a little bit more accommodating. So that little stuff goes a long way in creating lifelong fans and not just people that go to one game and never come back.
That's really cool. I think we're approaching the tail end of this podcast, so I got two things for you. First, I got a final question, and you don't have to go too deep into it, but something I'm just naturally curious about. And the second is, we're gonna have a little rapid fire session, just get your quick thoughts on various NBA and Pelican events. Cool. So the first question is, as an organization, what's more valuable, new customer acquisition, so sort of picking up people who have never been to a Pelicans game before, or customer retention? What's there more of a focus on? And from a number standpoint, what brings more value over, you know, like a lifetime of a customer, or, you know, over the next several seasons?
I'll tell you what puts the biggest dent in the number that they're trying to hit at the end of the year is retention. There's a lot more customers to keep on board than there are to find new ones. You know, as Mason mentioned, that 10,000 season ticket number, we've been above that ever since I was there. I keep saying we like I'm there, but the Pels have been above that number at least since I've been here. And it's really hard to sell 10,000 brand new season tickets in a season. So retention for sure is a much bigger chunk of the pie, but finding new customers is always the focus. There's a 30 person team there that's always looking for new business, because if you can't grow the fan base from the ground up, you'll never hit the sellout that you're looking for.
Cool. Very fair. Okay. So prepare yourself. I have a few questions. This is just going to go from off the top. All right. First is pretty easy. Pelicans over under was at 45.5. Over or under?
Okay. I've invested some personal capital in this. I was in Biloxi over the weekend. I took the over. And I'm not sure why. I think it's just like, it's just fan optimism. You know, conventional wisdom would say Boogie's gone. team's going to go down, but I saw how well this team played without him. I like the over. I really do. I think they're going to score a lot of points, and it's going to be hard to stop. So I like the over.
Cool. Mason and I agree. We talked about that right before having you on. So good Please. Call there. Okay.
Glad I aligned with the experts.
Yeah. Next question. Are the Lakers going to make the playoffs with LeBron?
Yes. Short answer.
Okay. Cool. We'll take the short answer.
Yeah.
So out of the Spurs and the Blazers, who misses? And if neither, who do you have missing out the playoffs in the West?
Ooh, that's tough. I think the Blazers miss. And I think the reason why is because they're going to trade one of the guards.
Oh, I like that. I'd love to see one of their guards gone.
Me too.
For the record, I called both those teams missing. Like, I have the Nuggets.
Who'd you have out?
The Spurs and the
Blazers. Oh, who'd you have in then? You had the Nuggets in? I like that.
Yeah, Lakers, Nuggets, Timberwolves, and then the rest of the – I feel like the more – and Pelicans, obviously, and the other choices. So, but the one thing we talked about was the wild card being what happens with Jimmy Butler. So you mentioned one of the guards for the Blazers, which is an interesting theory too, but – I think Butler is a pretty big wild card.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I just can't see Pop. It's so weird to think of him out of the playoffs. It's so weird to think about.
Yeah, it's so hard counting him out. Okay, next question. Jahlil Okafor will play meaningful minutes for the Pelicans, yes or no?
I want to say yes. I think it's a no. I think it's an important step that he's gotten a second look. Or third look or fourth look, however many looks you want to call it. But I don't think he'll
– It's his first look of choice. He's the first guy to pick.
Yeah. But I just don't – I don't see the fit, to be honest with you. I think it's a great flyer if he turns out to be great. But I don't see him playing super meaningful minutes. He might make the team, but I don't see him really playing that much.
Okay. Dude, you were listening to us somehow recording – before we
I promise you I wasn't
and I don't know how that's possible. It sounds like you were
okay. Who you got winning MVP next year?
AD.
And I like it.
That sounds like a homer pick, but
it's his year.
I really think it is. So I don't think the Lakers are going to be good enough for LeBron to get looks over the other Western Conference guys. It's going to be really hard for him to win it now that he's in the same conference as KD, Steph, all those guys, Harden. It's going to be tough. The Celtics, you're going to have Hayward back. I think he's going to take some shine away from Kyrie a little bit. Mm-hmm. And AD's going to like legitimately have the ball in his hands 90% of the plays, 90% of the possessions. Like there's not going to be a lot of times where the Pels have the ball and he didn't touch it. So I really think he's going to stuff the stat sheet and he's going to score a lot of points. And if we hit the over, like I say we will, and he's the main guy leading that charge, I really think he's going to get a lot of looks.
I like it. Okay. Craziest thing or funniest fan story that craziest thing you've heard a fan say to you.
All right. I have two and they're both from the same guy. I'm not going to say his name. I'm not going to say his name because I'm sure he's the type of guy, like the type of fanatic fan that listens to this podcast until this long in it. Like, I know he's listening right now. The first time he didn't renew, sorry, he was my customer twice. The first time he didn't renew, it's when Monty got fired, and he had been telling me all year long that he wanted Monty fired. And then when we fired him, he was like, oh man, can't wait to see who they get. And then he and I were talking over the summer, and I can't remember exactly how long it was between Monty getting fired and Gentry being hired, but it really wasn't a long time. But I talked to him, and he was like, if they don't hire Mark Jackson, I swear to God, I'm not going to renew my tickets. And I was like, dude, if they hire Mark Jackson, I'm quitting because this job will not be worth having anymore. And obviously we didn't hire Mark Jackson, and he, honest to God, did not renew. He was really like dead set on it. I don't know where in his mind he got the idea that Mark Jackson's a good coach, but I'll never know why he did that. But
well, you know, after Mark Jackson left the Warriors, they fell into total disarray.
Yeah, they really crumbled. They crumbled without him, yeah. So, without his strong leadership, I totally get it. Yeah. And I'll tell you what, the TNT broadcast has never been – or excuse me, the ESPN broadcast has never been better. It's – Jesus.
I think Jason said – Jason from the site said something along the lines of, I wish Mark Jackson would finally get a coaching job so you'd never have to hear him again.
Yeah, exactly. Every time I listen to a broadcast, I just think, why is Doris Burke not in that seat? And the talking pinstripe suit is not somewhere else. But I digress. The second time this guy, though, yeah, I finally got him back on board after a year. He believed in Gentry, whatever. The second time he dropped his tickets in the middle of the year because we stopped selling Diet Coke at the concession stand near his. I promise you, he was like, I can't go to these games no more. They don't have no more Diet Coke.
Oh,
and he stopped paying for his tickets and never answered my phone calls again. So,
and he's still been gone to this day?
He might be back at this point. I don't know. Did but when I left, he Diet still Coke? Wasn't there.
It's probably one.
I think in this one stand, this one concession stand by his seats, they put it like a slushy machine in it or something. Oh, but like man. He called me up out of the blue one day and just railed me over the Diet Coke thing. And I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot. I also double as the head of concessions for this movie concession, as well as your ticket rep. Let me go fix that real quick. We've heard a lot of crazy stuff, but the Diet Coke thing just blew me away. Absolutely.
That's amazing. Okay, last question. What has been your favorite giveaway over the years?
Ooh.
And is there like anyone that you kept you're particularly fond of?
So I have all the bobbleheads from my years there.
I don't have a single one. I need
really.
I need some.
I'll have to hook you up. I think my favorite one, to be honest, is the Mason. You probably have this one. It was a season ticket giveaway. The Anthony Davis Team USA bobblehead.
My dad might, but I don't have that.
It's great. Like, he's wearing the Team USA uniform. He's wearing number 14, which is super weird, like, because you don't think of him as being in that number, but he was obviously, not the focal point of that team. He didn't get first pick, but I love bobbleheads. I've always been – my dad was a sports writer for 30 years or something crazy, so I've collected a lot of memorabilia over the years, and I've always loved bobbleheads, and I think that was my favorite one. It just looks really good. It's unique. Like, you can't get it anywhere else. I just love that bobblehead. The King Cake Baby bobblehead's a close second, though.
Oh, man.
My parents made sure I got that one.
I know you're a fan. I know you're still salty about that Twitter handle thing.
Oh, man. Let's not bring up old wounds here.
Yeah, sorry about that.
One more question. Are you applying for to be the next PA of the Pelican?
I am not. I know Pete, the old one, really well. I cannot. I don't think I had the athleticism to fill his shoes or the dancing skills. But I think you should, because then you get to be the King Cake Baby as well.
Wait, you get to be both? How can you be both? They're on the court at the same time.
When they're not, when they like, so if you ever seen the King Cake Baby do like the dance routines and stuff, that's the main mascot guy.
What? This is
yeah.
This is the most shocking news you've given us.
Mason's whole world is crashing down.
You think we hire a second guy just to be the King Cake Baby for four games a year? Doesn't seem like a good business model.
No, just like the contract guy, just for like a month or so.
Maybe. Yeah, I think
wander around the city being a creep.
Exactly.
If you ever notice, though, if they're ever on the court at the same time, like you'll notice that Pierre's really animated and doing mascot-y stuff, and then the King Cake Baby just kind of walking around waving like he's
being creepy. Yeah.
Like the first lady or something. And that's probably because like there's a Pelicans dance team member in it or something. Like they just throw somebody in there.
That's awesome. I love that.
That's awesome. I feel like that's a great note to end on. This is something to look forward to when we see Mr. King Cake Baby again this season. We know his secret. His secret's out. But
right.
No, Chase, this was a great podcast. Thanks for coming on. You were extremely insightful.
Yeah, no problem. I really enjoyed it. Thanks for having me on. Next time I'll try to keep my answers down shorter so you guys can get out of here. But I enjoyed talking to you. I love talking basketball. Nah, man,
this is August NBA season. We want to hit on all the things that maybe we don't get enough chance to talk about during the heart of the year, which is, I mean, the NBA has pretty much turned into like a 10 or 11 month year with, you know, basketball preseason, NBA season, playoffs, free agency, trades. Like, it's crazy. It's the longest season of all the major sports. And so getting a chance to actually take a step back and talk about something really interesting like this is awesome. So we appreciate the detail, and I think the listeners will too. So echoing Shamit's comments, thank you so much. We really appreciate the you coming on and sharing all this knowledge.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me on in the only dead time of the 11-month year season. I appreciate being the filler.